These trees, the mother of these type of trees in the whole of this area.
This historic mango tree grows in the center of Kikandwa. But what is a community to do when its wood is needed for fuel? One man and now a whole community found the answer in nature. Welcome to Nature Answers, rural stories from a changing planet. We explore stories of how communities in rural sub-Saharan Africa are working with nature to adapt to the climate crisis. I am your host, Martin Mogem. Guess what? Today it was 50 degrees Celsius in Mali. Climate change is a reality. We are not talking about Mali today, but in this episode, we are back in Uganda, where one man inspired a community to work with nature instead of against it. And now, a new generation is doing the same. Are you ready? Hidden among grassy hills, banana plantations, and red dirt roads, the village of Kasiri is far removed from the hustle and bustle of Kampala, the capital city of Uganda. The only sounds you can hear are birds singing in the trees and, let's say, an occasional moo from a lone cow wandering in the bush. The village center consists of a majestic mango tree. It is marked with a wooden sign with painted letters saying, "Come to Kikandwa to meet the 100-year mango tree." Community members gather around the tree. Curious children pick around its trunk. They are scolded by adults and sent back to the primary school only a few feet away.
The children eat mangoes. This is our office, by the way. That's where we gather. Children also study from this place.
That's John Kangago. If the heart of the community is the mango tree, John is the brain of the community. John is joined at the base of the tree by community members. They are seated on blankets and benches, chatting amongst themselves in Luganda, their mother tongue. One of these villagers is Vincent Lutalo. That's him, sharing a laugh with his translator, McDonald Bumba, from the World Wildlife Fund. John founded the Kikandwa Environmental Association, or KEA, in 1999. Vincent is one of the original members. John credits his grandfather. It was his dedication to nature that inspired John's motivation for taking action against climate change. His family has been in the area for generations. Here's John again. We interviewed him under the mango tree so you can hear the sounds of the community in the background.
My grandfather picked the seeds, went to the Entebbe to pick seeds. He walked on foot to Entebbe. Then he came back on foot.
Entebbe is a city 100 kilometers away from Kikandwa.
When I grew up after studies and so forth, and then I started thinking that these people who didn't go to school knew the value of what? Planting trees and keeping the environment.
Although the mango tree may have inspired John to take action, motivating the community was more difficult.
Therefore, I mobilized my colleagues, and my colleagues also, they took it serious. This tree is the mother of these type of trees in the whole of this area. And the people have been wanting to cut it for firewood or for charcoal, but I refused with my colleagues. That's why even now people have started valuing the trees.
Before we dive into the ways this community fought against climate change, Let us examine why they even needed to in the first place. The area was in a rough state. Frequent drought dried up nearby water sources, and heavy winds wore away the soil, making it less fertile. Many indigenous trees were at risk of becoming extinct, while animals had begun disappearing from their natural habitats. All of these problems contributed to famine, poverty, food and nutritional insecurity, and an overall poor standard of living. John started the Kikandwa Environmental Association as a one-man army, but he soon realized he couldn't fix every problem himself. He had to get others on his side. This was easier said than done. Even Vincent was hesitant first to join the project. You hear the translator speaking for Vincent here.
So he thought it was just a myth, it's just people talk, but when he entered he realized that people are really changing, and he's actually improved his life.
Vincent's change of heart came after he took part in training sessions hosted by John. They were held through his association. He has been holding these sessions for the past 20 years. They cover a wide variety of nature-based solutions. Remember, nature-based solutions are ways of adapting to climate change that both increase biodiversity and help communities, and of course, they use the lessons learned from nature to do that. One of the most important training sessions involved teaching community members how to properly farm their crops. This included how and when to cut down trees. Instead of chopping down the entire tree for firewood, they learned how to sustainably use different parts of the tree for resources. Vincent says before the training, the constant hunt for firewood caused conflict between neighbors. Charcoal is the main fuel source for the majority of Ugandans, especially in rural areas.
Violence used to be a lot towards women because women were mandated to go in the fields to get firewood and all that, do a lot of donkey work. So now it has reduced because there is less of cutting wood. And people have been trained to respect each other, respect different boundaries, and mostly because they no longer cut down trees, they only get branches, so violence towards them has reduced.
Now, you may ask what trees have to do with violence against women and children. Women and children were most affected as it was their chore to collect firewood. When they couldn't find firewood, they would be unfairly blamed for not doing their part or harshly disciplined for not doing enough. So you can see why the need to find trees was so important to them. Prior to these training sessions, many people would cut down entire forests for charcoal. Even the community's mango tree was at risk of being chopped down before John's association intervened. Let us talk about business now. And charcoal is a lucrative business in Uganda. Charcoal burning for commercial purposes was recently outlawed in the northern areas of the country in May of 2023 by President Museveni, the current president of Uganda. But this has not stopped people from participating in black market charcoal trading. John may have inspired people to join in on the forest restoration project, but he struggled with teaching people on why these projects were important. The poor standard of living and lack of income in the community made some villagers reluctant to take a chance on new projects. Others simply followed along with John without completely understanding why they were participating. Vincent was a part of this group at first.
So he felt like he was just planting, you know, just planting because it's, they have told me I'll earn something, but he's realizing that there is more fruits from what he's earning.
The training sessions began branching out into different ways of working with nature to adapt the environmental changes in their community. This included beekeeping, harvesting road rainwater, and building a reliable water source.
They used to have a problem of water because it's very far, you know, it's hilly. So now they dug a well so that they can have water nearby. So he was telling me there is water nearby there.
Out of all the projects the KEA has started, the most successful has been the tree nursery. If you follow the trail behind the school, past the forest of pine trees and beehives, you will find the tree nursery. This nursery hosts over 100,000 seedlings. The locals call it their supermarket. Vincent says if you came back in a couple of weeks, every seedling will be gone. They are sold to neighboring communities who have started following in Kakandwa's footsteps. Vincent explains how the nursery operates.
So how it works, it's a participatory approach where everyone is included. Community members, like the community here. So each member brings different things. For example, they purchase bags where they put the soil. Then each member is supposed to bring the compost, like the cow dung. Then they bring the topsoil, the black soil, which is good. Then each member is supposed to come with the seedlings that they used to plant. Then the whole process of looking after the nursery bed and all that is basically a job of each community member, not one member. So they also involve the kids so that they know how it's done and how to collect different things so that they also learn.
Women have become more involved in decision-making processes at the nursery. They also help alongside men in the nursery itself.
So the women are not left behind. They're helping in different methods of farming. So they help in organizing the nursery bed, watering the seedlings, at the same time also getting the seedlings to where they're supposed to be planted. So they are involved in every part of the project.
While some still see women as inferior to men, gender relations have improved as more families have benefited from the nursery. It has also created a greater sense of community for the farmers.
Yeah, it's actually done a good job because when you look at the current members and the community, it's the same people who began, and more are joining from the communities. Yeah, so it's bringing more cohesion within members and the community.
Arguably, the greatest change is coming from the youngest generation. Both Vincent and John expressed how vital it is to train the youth in the community so they can take over from the older generation. Children as young as 5 are introduced to nature-based solutions by helping their parents transport seedlings to and from the nursery. At the age of 10, they help with planting the seedlings in the nursery itself. Their environmental education doesn't stop there. Vincent is also head teacher at the primary school. He says they have introduced nature-based solutions training into the classroom. In Kikandwa, primary school is from ages 6 to 14 and secondary school is ages 15 to 18. Prior to starting the new project, the community only had money to send 5 children to secondary school. Now, 30 children have the opportunity to further their education. The average cost to send a child to secondary school is 100,000 Ugandan shillings a year. That's the equivalent of 36 Canadian dollars. It's perhaps not much for a Canadian, but let me tell you, it's enough to prevent some parents from sending their children to school in Uganda. Vincent explains how the projects have been vital in helping children continue their education.
So now, with the different undertakings they're using, income is increasing. Now, kids no longer stop at primary level. Now, they're going to secondary level because the different skills and the different incomes they're getting from the different projects is helping them to go further their education into secondary, because that is normally the hardest part, leaving primary. Then if you don't have money, so it's hard to go to secondary class.
Another reason why children attending secondary school is important is so that they can pass on their knowledge to other children. Children have to travel outside their village to attend secondary school. The community hopes that informing neighboring communities about their work will encourage them to start their own projects. Vincent says the reaction from their neighbors has increased the community's income as they buy more seedlings. That inter-community connection is already paying off.
So people have been very positive. People are actually coming to buy different seedlings, tree seedlings, those for fruits and those for wood. So people are coming in. They are very positive about the project that is running here.
Local leaders have been supportive of the project. One even visited the community to learn firsthand about the importance of community coming together.
There's a local leader who came to see what is available so that he can make people fall in love with what is happening, so that they become more involved, so that they can spread not only here but the nearby community, because no community can work in isolation. Once it's happening here, it's like a ripple effect.
Johnny is hoping this ripple effect creates waves in government. While traditional and local governments are for the project, it's more complicated the higher up you go. The friction between the community and government existed far before the project began, and not all natural solutions have been beneficial. Before the KEA was created, the government encouraged locals to plant pine trees that could be used for timber. While planting pine trees can be beneficial to the environment, it was not the right decision for Kikandwa. Villagers say none of the crops they planted underneath the trees will grow, and the roots have invaded neighboring gardens. They now refer to the area as a dead forest. That's why for a nature-based solution to be properly considered a nature-based solution, it has to meet more than one piece of criteria. This is defined by the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. First, it has to increase biodiversity, which the pine trees obviously did not do. Solutions also have to be done in consultation with the community, not be pushed on them. Any sacrifices that have to be made to put in the solution have to be balanced by sustainable benefits to the community. And of course, the solution has to be economically viable. It has to benefit the community. That's why, since the pine forest, the association has been very particular about what projects they take. They want to ensure each one will benefit the community. Please repeat after me. It will benefit the community. This was the case when beekeeping was introduced 10 years ago. Vincent says beekeeping has been important to conserving the environment through pollination and also increases the community's income. Through the sale of honey, the community can make over $1 million each harvest. Beekeeping is one of the projects where children also are playing a vital role.
We try to educate kids the good things about beekeeping, so when they go back to their homes, they are trying out these things, which means income generation is increasing in different households.
Beehives are scattered all across the community, including near the nursery. The hives are wooden boxes that are propped up by sticks or suspended in the trees by rope. Hundreds of bees now pollinate the surrounding gardens, including in the nursery. There, flowers bloom from the tips of tobacco plants. These were planted to ward off snakes. With each new project, more villagers are becoming economically and nutritionally stable. Their children are able to continue their studies past primary school, and the forest around them creates a vibrant ecosystem for different plants and animals. Vincent says he has noticed not only a change in income, but also in nature.
So the most fundamental change he's seeing, one, there was a very, very long drought, but these days there is a lot of rainfall. And the other one is because they have planted a lot of trees around. So these are windbreakers, they safeguard a lot of the matoke down there, so they are no longer being put down. The same applies to their houses because there are lots of trees around, so it lessens the force to put the houses down because most houses this side are not built to the standards of town.
Environmental conservation has brought prosperity and stability to the Kikandwa community. But where do they go from here? When asked where he would be in 10 years, Vincent says he's positive that he will be reaping the rewards of his past work. Over the next decade, the mango and avocado trees he planted will be ready to be harvested, resulting in more income for his family. Vincent is also looking forward to the impact the freshly planted trees will have on the environment. Vincent takes in the fresh air around him and asks us to do the same.
So he's also saying, he's asking you, hopefully you see the difference in the aroma of the air. The air is fresh.
He asks if we notice the difference between the clean air in Kikandwa versus the polluted air in Kampala. And definitely, yes, we did.
It's lovely.
And the difference is clear. However, work here is far from over. Vincent says the community needs to maintain the project.
He's advocating for, if there is an opportunity for more voices, for tools, more funding to make sure that what they have begun doesn't stop where it is, so that it can increase more people coming in.
Vincent says educating the children has become one of the community's top priorities, but they are struggling due to the dire state of the school. It is made up of wooden planks and support beams. The metal roof does its best to block out the elements. Most children sit on the ground as there are not enough benches for everyone. Vincent says the community needs help to ensure they don't lose the next generation of environmental conservationists.
Like more people to come on board to see how they can help, make sure they have better structures to accommodate more so that those environmental champions don't stop at that age.
The sounds of these champions, as Vincent calls them, echo in the background. Together in one room, these children will be the future of the Kikandwa community. As the teacher dismisses them, the children run outside to steal a glance at us from behind the trunk of the mango tree again. The tree here serves as more than a meeting place or a study room. Yes, it is an ever-present reminder to the community of Kikandwa that allowing nature to grow and prosper can lead to never-ending rewards. This is Nature Answers from Farm Radio International. You can learn more about nature-based solutions and the people implementing them, of course, by subscribing to Nature Answers wherever you get your podcast. You can also follow us on social media at Farm Radio. Find pictures of the community of Kikandwa on our website at farmradio.org/natureanswers. You also find transcripts and more about nature-based solution there. And finally, share Nature Answers with your friends and family. We had love to spread the word. Until next time, I am your host, Martin Mogem, coming to you from Yaoundé, Cameroon. See you for the next episode.
This episode was written and produced in Uganda by me, Alex Dines, with help from Farm Radio International's office based in Kampala, Uganda. The staff and broadcasters made me feel welcome, and without them, I never would have been able to highlight a community whose work continues to inspire me. The sounds were recorded on location by myself and Liam Baker, with help from broadcasters and the team at Farm Radio. We joined as part of an internship program with Carleton University's School of Journalism. Interpretation was provided by McDonald Boomba. It was edited by Tara Spirkeroff. Farm Radio compensated community members who participated in interviews. It is common practice to compensate a person in this region for the time he or she spends being interviewed. Our podcast would exclude many important perspectives if we only interviewed those who could afford to step away from their economic activities without compensation. This podcast was produced thanks to funding from the Government of Canada.